All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. This Friday's the Sandy Williams. So, Sandy.
This isn't Stevie Wonder, though.
No, not quite. But I will say this, Sandy. You know, you and I aren't warmongers. We're not.
No.
And we don't want to see war. I mean, you know, based on the killing machines that are out here now, you don't want to see.
No, I don't think either one of us is a pacifist, though, either. So, I mean, there obviously is a place for an army, and there's a place for defense, and there's a place for protection. But our country needs to take a realistic view of what our strategic interests are and how far we're going to – how committed are we going to get? Are we going to get overcommitted? You know, every family has to worry about getting financially overcommitted or overextended. And we as a country are seriously overextended right now in the places in which we're offering our commitments. And we should understand unintended consequences of all of this overextension. For instance, Ukraine. We've given Ukraine a reason to believe that the West will support them and will back them in, for instance, before the war, in a negotiation against Russia to protect them from needing to negotiate with Russia to undertake some joint defense treaty with Russia or various kinds of economic treaties with Russia. Ukraine is in the region of influence of Russia. There's no question about it. It's got this shared history. It's got this shared geography. The economies of the two countries are totally intertwined with each other. And so we, however, in 2014, played a significant role in the 2014 coup that drove the then elected head of Ukraine out. He had committed, I guess, the sin on our part of backing out of something he had initiated, which was entry into the EU, and instead he was taking an offer from Russia to get very cheap gas supplied to them, as well as about a $15 billion set of grants. And so we decided to participate. Our CIA, we funded mightily the what led to his being put out of government and replaced with a right-wing government. Since then, we have given Ukraine all kinds of capacity of promises that we would back them so that they wouldn't have to enter into these deals with Russia, ultimately leading to the Ukrainian war. We have promised them support, and we have provided them with support, but not troops and not strategic weapons to have an offensive war against Russia. Everyone understands, and even now everyone's eyes are opening to the proposition that if war goes on very long, Russia will prevail and get what it wants out of this. And that, meanwhile, the people of Ukraine are suffering huge casualties. 6 million people have left Ukraine. Ukraine is going to be a shadow of its former self when they get out of this. Are they going to be better off because of the position we put them in? I don't think so. And it's much like the position we created for the people of Iraq, the people of Afghanistan, where we went in with nation-building thoughts and came out with leaving behind a very big mess. And so we shouldn't get overextended, not just to keep ourselves from making the mistake of financial mistakes and military mistakes, but because it's terrible for the people who are the victims of that overextension, which are the people themselves. The same would happen in Taiwan. If we decide to give Taiwan the wherewithal to defend itself, and if we excite China into believing that they need to exert their military might to keep Taiwan from asserting independence from it, contrary to our 1979 agreement to not be participating in that, we will end up seeing Taiwan reduced to a rubble.
You know, Sandy, I just keep hammering away at these things with you because many of us in this country don't believe that these things can happen. We don't believe that we're ever going to war with Russia. We don't believe we're ever going to war with China because, as you said earlier, it's never happened before. And so we don't believe it can happen, and we somehow believe our country is going to figure out a way to keep us out of war with Russia and China. And there was a time when we did have that. There were people in place in our government that steered us clear of these kinds of endeavors.
Well, we had the Cold War, and the Cold War was actually a situation with real rules in place. We honored the sphere of influence of the Soviet Union, and that sphere of influence included the Warsaw Pact, Eastern European countries behind the Iron Curtain. And so when the people of Hungary had an uprising in 1956, I think, the Russians sent in 100,000 troops or a bunch of tanks and quelled the uprising, okay? And we stood by. We didn't send them troops. We didn't send them money. We didn't support the uprising. The same happened in Czechoslovakia. We honored, you know, in spite of the fact that there were people who were suffering possibly as a consequence of it, we honored the sphere of influence of the Soviet Union. And we need to reflect on the fact that major powers have spheres of influence. It's this kind of pragmatic, maybe it's amoral, notion of real politic. But if we don't honor it, we are going to find out the severe consequence of it, because that policy was based on centuries of experience in international affairs. And the problem with what we're doing today is, you know, when we were rattling our swords about Vietnam, we were dealing with a little country, Vietnam. We're rattling our swords now against China. We're rattling our swords now directly against Russia. We're talking about direct or quite direct conflicts with either China or Russia or both of them, neither one of which have we ever done in the past.
You know, Sandy, it's you hear the possibility of Iran and Korea, and these people are all talking about the United States, and clearly, any movement, any involvement with us, with Russia or China, it becomes World War III, right?
Well, you know, we think the United States is so highly favored in the world. We should understand that even Israel, this stepchild of ours, has quite an arm's-length relationship with us, has been very late in the game in terms of any sort of sanctions against Russia with respect to Ukraine, has taken quite a neutral path with respect to that whole situation. And so, you know, we, with our flexing of our muscle all over the world in the name of the world order of laws, don't understand the impact that all these other countries aren't necessarily as upset with the way they're being ruled and the way they're the government that they've chosen than we would project to them. Okay, and when we are saving them from themselves, they are not altogether appreciative. The people of Russia might not like living under Putin, but they don't really appreciate America's intrusion and the threatening of Mother Russia in their minds with respect to NATO's spread into the old USSR countries and into Ukraine. So I just think we need – there's far more nuance involved with what we should do internationally than we ever give credit for.
You know, Sandy, I do know that having this conversation repeatedly – and I'm sorry. We're praying and hoping that this doesn't go where it looks like it's headed. Right? It for all the world looks like it's going to be hard for us. We put ourselves behind the eight ball. Both instances.
Well, you look at what's happening now. The headlines in the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal the last couple of days is that the appears to be waning support in the United States for all the financial aid to Ukraine. Okay, so as you know, we can say, well, it's just a question of our appetite to support Ukraine. We should understand that what will happen is a travesty for Ukraine. You know, we've allowed them to think that they could withstand and not negotiate with and not participate in the sphere of influence of Russia and to escape the sphere of influence of Russia when we had no real capability or intent to back that up, okay? So the reality, they live in a reality. And if we change that reality only temporarily, what we leave them with is a terrible situation. I just fear that we're in the process of doing the same with Taiwan. And, you know, with all this bravado, we should understand the downside is not just our downside. The downside is NATO. It's the places that we're toying with. Taiwan, the Taiwanese, Ukraine, the Ukrainian people. They're the ones suffering. You know, we might say, well, we went in to save them. Well, if we didn't have the intent to really do everything necessary to put them outside the reality of their geography and their socioeconomic realities, then we shouldn't have been doing it in the first place.
You know, Sandy, I was reading something the other day, and I forgot where it was, and it said that Russia is dangerously getting close to running out of ammunition. And I'm sitting here, and I'm reading that, and I'm not believing it, number one. I can't believe that in this short period of time, in this one-year war, that Russia is running out of...
Well, we might be projecting because the West is actually... I mean, Ukraine is running out of ammunition, and the countries that have been supplying Ukraine, you know, who did not put themselves on a war footing for production, right? So they're producing what they produce, and they're sending stuff to Ukraine that they can send. But I think what's clear is that the people supplying Ukraine are running short as well. So we promise tanks, but we have to make them first. We're promising ammunition for their artillery, but we've depleted our inventory to the point where we're probably now in a situation where we have to manufacture it too. So, you know, when you're running a war at this full scale, you use up ammunition at a really rapid clip. But Russia is on a war footing and has turned its manufacturing into war footing kind of capacity. And so I'm confident that they can continue to operate. They might operate at a somewhat skinnier level. From my particular distant perspective and a sort of amateur analysis, my belief is that there's going to be a ceasefire for a negotiation because the collateral potential is either there's a peace or both sides have had time to rebuild themselves to go back at it.
So we've got to go to a break. Steve, hang on. When we come back, it's Friday. That's Fridays with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.
I did my best, but I guess my best wasn't good enough. 'Cause here we are back where we were before. Seems nothing ever changes. We're back to being strangers, wondering if we ought to stay or head on out the door. Just one.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. And it's Friday with Sandy Williams. And, you know, let's go to Steve from Milwaukee. Hey, Steve, your thoughts, man. You really think that it's our responsibility to support Taiwan, it's our responsibility to support Ukraine and any other democracy all over the world that is threatened, that's our responsibility as a government, as a people?
No, of course not. It's a choice. You can choose to support democracies and freedom, or you can choose to turn your back on it and walk away from it. Our country wouldn't even be a country if France had turned their back on us. They're the ones who had bogged the British in over at Yorktown in Virginia when General Washington was finally able to get him to surrender, and that was essentially the end of that Revolutionary War, something that took 8 long years, by the way. We declared our independence in 76. We didn't get a peace treaty until 1783. So that war went on for many, many years. Now, we have backed, right after World War II, we backed South Korea. And we did it so they wouldn't be taken over by communism and a military dictatorship of North Korea. And we've done that. They didn't have any great oil over there. They didn't have any great natural resources. It's not necessarily strategically in our interest to be there. We have bases very close by, right there on the island of Okinawa, and, you know, thousands and thousands of troops. But we chose to do it because we want to defend freedom and liberty, and we don't want countries taken over by military force, something that is going on right now or attempting to go on in Ukraine with Russia attempting to take over Ukraine by military force. And that's the same thing with Taiwan and China. He talks about all this ambiguity and things of that nature. Nice fancy words by my good friend Sandy Williams. But the fact is, we opposed the one China in 1979. Now, we lost that battle. It took place in the UN, and we capitulated because we lost the votes. But never has Taiwan been a part of communist China. I'm not saying China in general. I'm saying communist China. Communist China didn't take over in China until the mid-50s, right after World War II.
It was 1948.
48. Excuse me. My dates are off a little bit. I wasn't around then. But at any rate, right after World War II. Now, Chiang Kai-shek, he went to Taiwan because obviously he's going to get his head chopped off if he sticks around. He lost the war. And we backed him and democracy there ever since. It wasn't always a democracy. Neither was South Korea when we backed it. But since that time, it has certainly evolved into one. They vote themselves, their leaders, into office. They vote their leaders out of office. And Taiwan has never, ever been a part of China and never will be unless China forces it by military force. Now, the only thing stopping them at this point is the fact that the United States will back Taiwan. This isn't an obligation. It's a choice that each president that becomes president of our country will make or will not make. Thank God we have the right president in office now, and he is making the right choice. I respect the fact that Sandy Williams and maybe many others across America disagree with that choice. It is very costly. It could be costly not only, it's costly right now in treasure, it could become costly in blood. We lost a lot of soldiers in Korea to preserve that democracy. But look at the difference between South Korea and North Korea now. They are by far better off. They have one of the highest standards of living in all of the Asian Peninsula. It's a great asset to us and, quite frankly, to freedom and liberty, something that our nation was founded upon and is a bedrock principle. So, Taiwan is certainly not a perfect democracy, but it's a whole lot better than, say, Saudi Arabia, which is one of the top 10 brutal dictatorships in the world, yet we backed Saudi Arabia from any threat to it, including have a military base.
So you're a great used car salesman, my friend. And the truth of the matter is, it's easy to say we need to be defending these people, KJ. It really is. And it's laudable. But we're talking about Russia and China. We're talking about maybe going to war with China. That's not something, man, that you can, with your eloquence, that's not something that makes a lot of sense, man.
Well, and, he also said that it was up to the president. But actually, a war with China would certainly, hopefully, require a declaration of war by Congress. And so we haven't declared war since the Korean War, I believe.
Sandy, hold a thought.
Declarations.
KJ, hang on. Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
We could break through it if we
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Friday. That's Fridays with Sandy Williams. Sandy, do you want to respond to anything KJ had to say?
Only problem is that factually we sort of get wound up a little bit so that, we did recognize the One China policy. It was an act of Congress in 1979. We did adopt a policy ambiguity. It was announced. In fact, that word was used with respect to the policy. The ambiguity surrounded what was the status quo of Taiwan. There is no question that we have tampered with the status quo of Taiwan by arming it or helping it arm itself to such an extent So the problem is when we describe the situation, we sort of back ourselves into a conclusion, and so I just think that we need to get back to a situation where we recognize the real sphere of influence of a major nation. When we were fighting in Korea, China was a third world nation, and the fact was that we were pretty careful, and General Douglas MacArthur lost his command because of the fact that he tried to cross or thought about crossing the Yalu River and getting China directly involved in the war. We aren't really willing to take China on directly. We were taking North Korea on, and what we were doing was defending South Korea from a unification of its country in a civil war. And ever since then, our military, I noticed he doesn't talk about Vietnam. Vietnam was a horrible mistake, but we thought it was presented to us in the same manner that Korea was, that we were protecting South Korea from becoming a communist nation. We ended up leaving it with 2.5 million civilian deaths. They recovered. They've recovered as a communist nation. They've recovered into a very vibrant economy, one which is essentially allied with the United States vis-a-vis China. So, the world isn't simple. And when we try to cut it up into simple pieces, we make a mistake.
KJ?
Well, okay, we disagree on how we got or Taiwan got its status, but however we got there, we are here now. And Taiwan is a democracy, certainly much more so than a lot of other countries that we do business with, including, say, Turkey, for example, which is part of NATO. It's the threat to both Taiwan and Ukraine doesn't come from us. It's from other countries outside of their boundaries that are threatening them. We are responding to a threat to their freedom. We are not being off on some military adventure trying to expand our territory.
But my point is, what do you mean we? Why are we? And why is it that we are the policemen of the world? And we have to do this. We don't have to do anything.
That's correct. You are correct. We could be an isolationist country and not do anything. Matter of fact, that's what we did during the beginning of World War II. Hitler had conquered Poland and all of Western Europe, including France, and we still didn't get in the war. Now, eventually we did, because we were bombed at Pearl Harbor by Japan. So eventually we did get in the war at much greater cost, both in blood and treasure. We're trying to avoid that big, costly price to be paid, and we're trying to help Ukraine defend itself. Let me say this, because you always try to act like we have to be all in or not help at all. We don't have to be 100%. We don't have to be 0%. There's a whole lot of percentages in between.
China's not going to sit back.
Well,
and allow what it is you are talking about to happen.
Well, let me just speak to being all in or in between. That's the problem we've had with a number of places, and that's the problem I'm afraid we've put Ukraine in, is that we aren't all in for Ukraine. We've told them from the beginning, we aren't all in for you. We aren't going to give you the wherewithal to fight an offensive war against Russia. We aren't going to send troops. We aren't going to send you aircraft, okay? So now we're providing them with plenty of munitions that are allowing them to basically hold the Alamo for a year or two, okay? But the Alamo fell, and so far what we're seeing now as we look at Bakhmut is the inevitable looks like it's beginning to happen. The numbers, the word from the Ukrainians is, look, the Russians outnumber us 4-1 in terms of the population. Their capacity to throw military at us is essentially unlimited when compared to us. Even though they're wasting lives like they don't matter, they're causing us to expend our munitions, and we're losing lives at a clip that we can't sustain. And so what's the ultimate outcome of this going to be if we aren't willing to throw everything into it? And should we have put them in the position that they are now in by giving them the opportunity to say no to a negotiation with Russia in which they probably would have maintained territorial integrity? They would have had their own government. They would have had to agree to neutrality. There were some stipulations. They would have had to give up the Crimea, which is what they're going to have to give up according to American policy right now. We've told them indirectly, even through the news media, Crimea is not going to be retaken.
I don't even know if you listen to what you're saying, because you're saying we put Ukraine. We did not put Ukraine in any position. Russia did. Russia attacked them. Suddenly you remember that invasion that took place about a year ago.
Well, of course, but the question, wait, Steve, just slow down. The question is, why did they invade Ukraine, and would they have invaded Ukraine after the Yanukovych 2014 change in power, and then the negotiations that went on, as well as the war that actually started in 2014 in eastern Ukraine, and the Minsk agreement, which Zelensky decided not to abide by? I mean, this is a very complicated matter, and yes, I don't agree with the Russian invasion of Ukraine, but you have to step back and say, why did Russia essentially cut off its nose to spite its face? Why are they expending huge treasure and blood, and what prompted them? And I think you'll find that what prompted them was the offering of NATO, the NATO alliance to Ukraine, and the incursion of NATO into the old USSR countries, something which George Kennan, one of our guys, the founder of the Cold War, predicted would be the problem of extending NATO, and he predicted that in 1990.
Quickly, KJ, quickly.
For that Russian propaganda storyline, but I do not. And there's plenty of people who disagree with George. Look, the only reason Ukraine considered being a part of NATO is because they felt threatened by Russia, who is a military dictatorship with territorial desires. And they're going to take that territory by force or any other way that they can. And it has turned out to be 100% accurate and correct that Ukraine was justified to fear that Russia would invade it, because that's exactly what they did. They never even applied for NATO membership until after they were invaded. The villain here is clearly Russia. Their territorial desires by military force are crystal clear to anybody with two eyes that wants to open them. And I'm glad that you and all, maybe a bunch of professors, can get in a room and talk very nicely about, well, if the real reason Putin is doing X, Y, Z is because he fears that NATO is going to invade him. There's been two people that I can remember off the top of my head that tried to invade Russia and go to Moscow. One was Hitler in World War II. Didn't work out very well for him. And the other one was a short guy named Napoleon for France. Did not work out too well for him either. No one is trying to invade Russia to imply or threatening them in any way. Anybody who implies different is not telling their truthful story. They're telling a lie to try to mask the fact that Russia is trying to take over territory at loss when the Soviet Union broke up. That's what's going on here.
All right, KJ, thank you very much for the call. Let's go to Dave from Milwaukee. Hey, Dave, what do you say?
Yes, good morning. Hey, first of all, let's dispense with this notion of America's interest in preserving democracy. That's a joke. Jimmy Carter was on the Tom Hartman show in July of 2015, and he explicitly declared America is a oligarchy, no longer a democracy. This came out of Jimmy Carter's mouth. Our foreign policy is all about preserving American hegemony for the American oligarchy. And we support murderous dictatorships whenever they serve their interests. Back in the 40s, Gandhi was asked what he thought about American democracy. He said it would be a good idea. You know, and this, you know, so Russia, it was an illegal war because it was a preemptive war. And preemptive wars are illegal, okay? When was the last time America had a legal war? Iraq was a preemptive war on our part, right? We bombed the smithereens out of Yugoslavia against the declarations of the United Nations. I mean, and people forget about what we did to Panama. I mean, all of our wars are illegal that America starts, and everyone seems to think that's okay.
Dave, I will say this, you know, it doesn't mean that because you don't support our nation in all its endeavors, Sandy, you know, that you are somehow turncoats. We've got people believing that we need to just believe whatever it is our nation puts before us, and let's just go ahead. It's, you know, those of us who don't, we're either linked in with Russia and we're anti-American.
Well, I just have this yin and yang view of the world, okay? And as I described earlier, and we are definitely yin, and the rest of the world, as we react to it, it becomes yang. And I believe in, and I know I wouldn't describe it as America first because I might be viewed as backing Trump, but I do believe that we ought to evaluate America's real interests and make sure that we don't overextend ourselves beyond America's real interest, because ultimately it's coming out of our pocketbooks. And one of the reasons I become so fastened on international affairs is that our military and defense budget sucks from us all the money that we could otherwise be spending on the American people and making the lives of the American people, particularly its middle class, bearable.
You know, Sandy, in that line of thinking, if we looked at it from that perspective, can you begin to imagine the amount of resources that it's going to take over and above the almost $1 trillion we're spending now in military spending, if we were to move forward with any of these things?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, we've increased our military budget. The Biden administration was asking for, I think, 812, and the Congress gave them 847 last time. And this time around, the Biden administration went up from the 847 to a larger number. You know, this appetite for international involvements clearly will relate to an increased defense budget, and it's a budget that we can't afford to increase. You know, it's way disproportionate to our economy. It's disproportionate to what our people deserve in terms of services.
We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the last few minutes of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Text us at the same number. It's, you know, Sandy Williams. And I, you know, Sandy, I really do, for the life of me, can't understand how people can volunteer other people's lives to get involved in these wars. And you know, it's easy to be brash and talk about what we should be doing. We're talking about sending people off to die, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to send people off to die, Sandy, I believe that it should... we've seen young men sent off to die for the wrong reasons. One of the main ones, Vietnam, we know. We saw that. And that never was rectified. It's one of the reasons why they did away with the draft. Because to draft guys...
Yeah, put skin in the game for every voter, right? So much easier to have... military adventures if the only people who go are people who, quote, volunteer, close quote. Yeah, I mean, it's changed the flavor of America's view of militarism materially, and I think it was a watershed moment in history. I think that we would be better off if we had a draft, and we would be better off in our decision-making because it would sober us up. But, you know, the other thing is something like Ukraine. Okay, we're not investing our own blood, but we're potentially hanging a country out to dry. And that's because we didn't evaluate our strategic interests going in, and we acted with bravado, much the way I think we're behaving with Taiwan, which is sort of initial bravado, not looking into what is our real interest. When you look at our real interest, you realize it doesn't square with the bravado. And we should understand that because we're Ying, our bravado will excite a similar kind of hostile reaction from the other side. If we're rattling our sword about Taiwan, saying, you know, arming it to the teeth, then a China, which views Taiwan as part of it, is going to be increasingly worried that Taiwan will announce its independence and require a war in order for China to secure the sovereignty of China over Taiwan.
So let's just look at it then, Sandy, from the practicality of it. Even with Ukraine, little nation up against a major nation, Taiwan, not even the nation, up against China.
Yeah, the biggest nation.
Yeah, there's no way in anybody's minds that either one of them, Ukraine is never going to defeat Russia. I don't care how many times we send them weapons, and even if we send them, you know, jets and all those things, they will never defeat Russia. In the long run, in a battle, it's impossible.
Well, the problem is, and I take a bit of umbrage from Steve's suggestion that I'm believing Russian propaganda. I just think that there is a whole course of American outlook toward foreign policy. Henry Kissinger, John Mearsheimer, a bunch of very respected people who look at American policy and say we ought to use real politics. We ought to look at real. We ought to recognize the hegemony of other nations that are major powers, okay? We went through a period after 1990 where there were no other major powers. We could flex our muscle. It was worldwide.
Yep.
We aren't in that situation anymore. We were in that situation briefly after World War II. We're not in that situation in 1985, for instance, and we weren't doing it. So I just hope I'm trying to inject a sort of a much more real analysis into this so that we can avoid knee-jerk kind of patriotic talk to something that's much more about what's America's interest, America's interest, what's in our interest as a nation and as a people.
Again, you know, Taiwan, little bitty island that would be swallowed up by China. And there's nothing we can do to prevent that if that happens, right? If China decides to make a move on Taiwan, how can we prevent it?
Well, and don't we realize that by arming it as we are and creating its wherewithal to, for instance, declare its independence from China, we're increasing the probability that that would happen. China has been content to let Taiwan operate as a separate autonomous province that has its own government, much the way Hong Kong did for a long period of time. And so, I just think we need to step back. We need to stop being emotional or simplistic, particularly about foreign affairs, particularly about our defense budget, and we need to sober up.
Taiwan is barking back only because they say, well, the United States is going to be backing us up.
Yeah. It's like, it's like the little kid in the playground who's got the big kid behind him, and he's flipping someone the bird, yeah. And saying, "And I got this guy behind me." And then when he turns around, the guy's gone.
Yeah.
The guy's gone. Oh God!
That's really what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And people need to understand that's what's at the root of all of it. Not that we're looking and we're cowards and we don't want democracy to reign all over. That's not it. It's common sense. It's what we're talking about. Taiwan is not going to prevent if China decided to move in on Taiwan tomorrow. I don't care how many weapons we've sold Taiwan. They're not going to be able to prevent it. How could they?
Right.
They're right there.
Yeah, and we just decide when we're especially interested in some place. And if you listen to Nuland's phone call that she had in 2014 during that rebellion, you'll realize the extent to which the United States has tinkered with the Ukrainian government. The Ukrainian government, everyone knew in 2014, the Ukrainians had the best government they could buy. You know, it was a very corrupt place.
All right.
We participated.
We got to get out of here. Sandy, great stuff as always. Thank everybody who made the show go. We'll be back on Monday. Have a great weekend. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.